This is Rackabix After Hours.
Time! Strap yourselves in for another special episode of Rack Addicts After Hours with your favourite jazz weirdo. It's Telmo. He's here again! How are you doing? Oh wow, that specifically. Pete's here too, and we're going to chat about music, maybe some technology, and maybe some musical technology, because that's what we do. But first, the weekly update. Telmo, you've been away for a bit more than a few weeks. So how's life? What's happening on planet Telmo?
A lot of things have been happening. I've decided that I will leave the UK
no.
for indefinite time.
Heartbreak.
I know. It's been almost 10 years of a beautiful relationship between me and the United Kingdom, which has finally come to the end for now. I think I need a bit of a change. Things that are a little bit more maybe perhaps challenging, maybe work on my family life a bit more, try different things. As I said, I finished uni, you guys know that. I really didn't want to go back to my old job, and I wasn't being particularly fulfilled by doing the sort of stuff that I was doing, function, like, you know, you guys been to weddings, you know how bands are, Mr. Brightside, that sort of stuff.
There's only so many times you can play it before it really just gets in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't want to do a job that particularly takes away my passion for the thing. I'd rather just focus on having music as a part-time thing, and just, but when I do it, it will be like really what I want it to be, you know, really full on. So yeah, need some time to figure out myself. Plus, I've got a lovely project with my other half where we got a house that we're looking forward to sort of start building it. And yeah, I'm still going to be coming to the UK to hang out with you guys.
Good.
So we can still do this.
Wonderful, wonderful. And of course, through the power of the internet, you can't escape us, really.
Oh, I won't. And yeah, I'm looking forward just to come here, but in a different way, without having to have a rent to pay. So yeah.
A new chapter.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Peter Reno, what about your week? What have you been up to?
Well, this week I have been indulging in some Pilates.
Well, that was unexpected. Are you a flexible man?
Well, I'm now.
Yeah.
So tell us, what is Pilates, Pete?
Well, I didn't actually know quite what it was. I had a vague idea that it was some sort of exercise regime, but I haven't really understood what was involved. So it's kind of like yoga in some respects with torture instruments.
No pain, no gain, they say.
Sort of brought into the fold, so to speak. So,
what manner of horrifying torture devices did they bring upon you?
Well, you start off with things like spiky balls.
Oh, I've seen those. Yeah, no
that
fun.
Type of thing, which you kind of roll on and that type of thing. But then you move on to the machines, and there's one called a reformer.
What?
Ooh, that sounds biblical.
Which looks like a rack from...
That you get stretched on?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Well, literally, that's kind of what it does. It's got sort of large chrome springs and then you sort of use those as leverage, and then you do a variety of exercises whilst leveraging these springs.
Oh.
Sounds scary.
So do you go to a place and you do it, or do you buy the equipment? Like,
well,
the springs?
You can buy the equipment, and I was looking at
how
much it costs. Not that I'm intending to buy any, I'm just curious.
Hobby.
But I have been going to private lessons, which is a bit more palatable than going to open classes.
I wouldn't be a fan of the group classes.
Yeah, I'd be a bit sort of possibly embarrassed, maybe. But it's doing my back the world of good.
Oh, that's good. Awesome.
And that's why I'm going. The analogy that I've used, it's like performing chiropractic on yourself in some respects.
Do you get some good clicks out of yourself
sometimes? I certainly did get some almost sort of donks from my spine. As
Is
I was
it like
sort of
unexpected self-clicks? It's just like, ooh, what's this?
Ooh. No, well, I've got a lot of clicky joints anyway.
Okay.
Just what you get when you get older. But no, I've definitely get that sort of almost a kind of clonking knocking sound when you sort of stretch your leg and then lower it in a certain way, and then suddenly your whole spine sort of goes bonk. But it's good, you feel great afterwards. And I've got some more of these private lessons coming up, and then hopefully from then on I'll have a sort of understanding how I can take it forward and do it independently,
a home practice routine.
But I don't have any intention of buying either a reformer or there's a couple of other devices. One's like a chair you sit on sideways, and that's also got some springs, and you use that to kind of straighten yourself up when you've done a particularly weird sideways stretch. I'm sure there's other moves that you can do it. And there's also one that I haven't tackled yet, and it's called a barrel. So it's like a padded arc barrel shape, and you sort of roll over, and I've seen people in photographs doing handstands from it and things like that. It's all a bit bizarre.
Like a circus.
Yeah, it does look quite strange, but
new adventures.
Yeah, I'm benefiting from it, and I intend to continue.
Excellent. I have some things to report from my week. One is that I'm making good coffee again. Amazing.
Ooh.
With a Colombian washed coffee from Kiss the Hippo in Richmond. But the second one is the guitar is continuing. I am playing things again. And Telmo, I've come across an interesting rhythmical section, which I don't fully understand. I can just about play it. I have the tabs here, but it doesn't have, in this particular section, it doesn't have useful notation. Where's it gone? It's not that bit. It's not that bit. It's this bit. It hasn't given me enough rhythmical information. So, to those listening, I shall describe it to you. Two bars of 6/4 and one bar of 2/4. This is on guitar, and you've got a hybrid picking situation with a couple of fingers doing the middle two strings here, and then you're picking the bottom string. So with your hybrid picking fingers, you're just playing all of those, which is nice and easy, and then you've got a bump, bump, ba-dum, bump, ba-dum going on. Is this baby's first polyrhythm? Is this polymeter? What am I doing here? Because it's confusing and confounding my brain.
That's polyben.
Polybenning. It turns around a little bit weird at the end with that little 2/4, so it gets
it's cool.
Gets up in there.
That's really cool. What the thing is that what you're showing me is the exact tablature, and it's a little bit ambiguous because it's in 6/4. You should be able to see the dotted rhythm and see what's happening in terms of...
Yeah, so on full tabs, you often have the just normal notation above it, and that's where you could extract your rhythmical stuff from. When here it's, they've put some dots underneath some of it, but that's
so so normally if you have like it just a quaver and you add a dot to it, it's a one and.
Yeah.
So you're adding an extra half beat on top of that. So I guess that's what they're trying, because it's in 6/4 and you've got three, so I guess each with a half beat that makes it six. But then I would have to listen to it, because you know you're not talking to an expert either. So it's like I know a bit of that stuff. You know, obviously I have to as a musician, but it's like, yeah, use your ears, man.
Is unfortunately the only way I can do it. And I've just about got this section down. This, interestingly, I mentioned this EP that I'm playing stuff from last week, and it is Ode to the Author by Tosca. The original CD that I bought was before they kind of published it officially, and they had some samples in there which really elevated the music, but they couldn't put it in the version that's on Spotify for copyright reasons. Pete, be prepared with the fader. I'm going to connect to the Tube Bluth on the Rodecaster so I can play you the samples, because they're quite cool. Now, this section that has confounded me that I'm talking about is a little bit angular in its harmony and wonky in its timing, so it's very unsettling, and it sort of gets more and more weird and wonky and goes into a full-on metal thing, which is really fun. That's how it actually sounds. Guitar mouth noises, but let me play the samples because they're really good. The first one, and I've lined these up with the live backing track, or the live stems, as they are in the original EP that not a whole lot of people have heard, which is a shame. But here we are. This is from a film called The Network. You heard of that one, Pete?
That's a great film, by the way.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
No, I have. There is a rant in The Network, which works really nicely in this unsettled build-up portion. Bear with me, I'm just getting Logic to use the Rodecaster as an output. There we go. Let's see if you can hear this. You got the fader up there, Pete?
Yes.
Wonderful.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
And then it goes into the big angry metal section, which is quite fun. I do want to talk to you about guitar tone and reverb quality and things
in a
bit, Telmo. But here's the other one. This is Alan Watts, very popular option for vocal samples in our corner of the modular world. I think Ian does a lot of this. This is from The Image of Man.
Because we have inherit from thousands of years of history, a view of man as something made and almost of a sort of breath breathed into a pot of clay or an image of clay, a kind of each one feels himself as a globule.
Ooh, there's some my guitar in there as well.
Mind, living inside a vehicle called my body.
Anyway, Alan Watts, what I did notice while playing that actually is, oh man, the Logic reverb is awful. This is Chromaverb, by the way. Tell me, you Logic, don't you? You're a Logic man some of the time. You're an Ableton man more of the time these days, though.
I've been a full-time Ableton man for the past 2 or 3 years now.
Really?
So,
you do know Logic, though, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I do. To be honest, I would say that I don't remember how bad or good they were. The Logic reverb, but what I could say is that maybe you want to work on the decay of the reverb if that is something that
it was that really kind of clanky thing that was going on, wasn't it? It's gross.
That's maybe not nothing that you can do there. Maybe just get like I mean, I would say Valhalla is such a good reverb. You guys know it, of course.
That's
could
true.
Be something to work upon.
I do have Supermassive on here, so I should use that. No, this is I tried the new one that came with. Did it? It might have been just an update, or if it was part of Logic X or something. Chromaverb, which none of the models sounded like how I wanted, so I went for Silververb in the end, and it sounds it's more along the right lines, but it's just super low quality. It sounds awful.
So is it like a plate, or is it like a hall?
Silververb in this mode. What do we even have a choice? No, we don't. It's just room with pre-delay, reflectivity, size, and density.
So for that sort of tone,
it's just grim.
From what I normally do when I'm using a reverb, and it doesn't really matter what kind of reverb it is, it could be, you know, the sort of stuff that I use would be more like the Realverb from Universal Audio. But my main thing is, as a guitarist, the pre-delay is probably the most important for me, like, function.
So how do you go about setting your pre-delay when guitar harmonizing?
Yeah, so, you know, when you're, like, first thing to think about, really, is you want to have the note as clear as possible without having the reverb washing it too soon.
Gotcha.
So what the pre-delay kind of helps doing is sort of only acting when the note's already kind of faded. So it helps with the clarity of my sound. So when I'm not playing, that's only really when you really realize that reverb's there. So it's not as prominent as you would expect it to be. So it's a little bit more, as I said, you know, like less prominent, a little bit more behind the scenes kind of thing. So I use like quite high pre-delay, especially with like rhythmic stuff. If I'm using like sort of like an ostinato form, or if I'm playing like freely, I would bring it down a little bit and have a bit more decay.
Okay, interesting. So on the guitar part, I used Chromaverb, and it's fine. But let's put this into practice, shall we? Mm. Where's my pre-delay? 8 milliseconds at the moment. That's basically nothing. But let's listen to it. Here we go. So this bit is definitely going to be a bunch of reverb. But let's turn up that pre-delay, see what happens. We've got 8 milliseconds. Let's go for 8 milliseconds.
So can you tell that it's acting a little bit later?
Indeed, you can hear that a little bit of attack. Let's go a bit more. Let's go for 80.
Yeah.
Let's go even further. 125.
Quite good, actually.
It's an improvement.
125.
I've taken so much of the high end out of this reverb as well.
No, but that's cool. Another thing with the reverbs, that's actually, you mentioned that high end thing. If you have like a really bright tone, darken your reverb. Yeah. If you have a really dark tone, brighten your reverb. Another thing that helps.
Guitar life hacks from Telmo.
I mean, I guess that you could use that for every instrument, really. If you want sort of like a sub bass, if it's got like a nice sort of like plinky or like a plonky attack. If you want to get a bit more out of it, you can maybe add some like really high-endy reverb. I don't know if you guys, you know, I do that for my like production stuff. I try to balance things out evenly on that sense so that they don't get too muddy or too bright.
Nice one. I will try out that Valhalla one though at some point, because you've got Valhalla DSP in your tip-top stuff, haven't you, Pete?
Yes, and I've also got it on my PC.
Plugins! Wonderful, wonderful.
It's an endless thing, man. Plugins. I've recently got some really cool stuff from SoftTube as well, like
SoftTube,
saturation, which is really helpful for mixing mostly. Like if you just want to add like some grit to like some drums and stuff like that. I've been doing loads of mixing recently for Inez's full album.
Oh yeah.
So my partner, she's releasing like a 7-track album. And they're just brilliant songs, and I'm playing drums and keys and bass and guitar, and you know, Phil is doing some other stuff in it as well. Nice. I ended up taking half of the sort of like mixing and mastering duties on that, and you just learn so much when you're facing like the issues of like, oh, this sounds so, you know, so dull, you know, or like you start getting your ways around how to fix a dull mix. And saturation is a really cool way of just giving some grit to something.
You can add in some extra higher harmonics in some places where you need it as well.
Big time. Nice. Yeah, big time. Drums is definitely my favorite on that.
I do miss having Universal Audio gear and all of the plugins.
Dude.
If I had the cash to get a Universal Audio interface, because I've still got all the plugins. Just can't use them.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
And
they've recently released the Hitsville, which is...
Hitsville?
Yeah, it's the Motown plugins. So it's basically, it's based on their EQ and their
preamps. Oh, Hitsville, yeah, it makes sense now.
Yeah, so Motown stuff. I don't really use it, takes a lot of DSP. Mm. But you start finding, you know, you can have 20 different EQs, but it's when you find your good 3 to 5 ones. It's that short list that you know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
That's really where we start finding your own sound. And for me, it's like, I really like the Neve stuff. For my guitar stuff, I tend not to use a lot of plugins, not a lot of, you know, it's not really crazy because you tend to focus more on the performance. But if you have a full band, then you want it to sound as good as possible, I guess.
That's a great attitude. I mean, there's going to be so many guitarists out there that are like, oh, it's got to be so specific because I need the gear. And you're just like, nah, just get the performance right, you moron.
Yeah, no, I think that is the most important. I'm not calling, of course, people morons.
That was me. I was calling people morons.
No, but you're right.
Even though I am guilty of also being a massive gear nerd.
But, you know, what you're doing is like a lot of stuff that you're using the Archetype stuff, aren't you?
That's Archetype Gojira.
That sounds so cool.
There's two of the different amp models, so it's a stereo thing.
Yeah. Oh, so you've got like two guitars on each side, or is it like...
One guitar, but two amps.
Two amps.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Because that's how the band does it live.
Okay, so that's another really cool thing to try out. Another thing that I do is I have one guitar like both like side panned on the back and then another one in the middle, and that sort of like gives you like a 3D dimension of things. I did that for an acoustic track that I did called After Hours.
Is that... Ooh, yeah, After Hours. Was that separate performances on those three tracks? All the same one?
No, they're separate performances. Cool. Actually...
So it'll be thick with two Cs.
Yeah, so there's, as I said, three guitars.
Yeah.
It's actually based on what we've been doing here for the last how many, God knows, years or whatever. That's why I call it After Hours. But it's kind of like a funny sort of interplay between guitars where you know, things come out where you're not expecting, you know, even like soloing and for example, I had like loads of chorus into acoustic guitars, which is something that not a lot of people do.
I've not really heard that much before.
But it's, sounds cool.
Awesome.
But that's it. Chorus and a bit of reverb and you're good to go.
Delicious. There we go. There's some mixing talk and guitar talk for you. I hope you enjoyed. There are two whole items of news. Oh, laden with it this week. Firstly, we've spoken about it before. The Modern Sounds Pluto is launching tomorrow as we record this. That'll be Wednesday, 6th July, 12 p.m. You can buy yourself a Modern Sounds Pluto for $499 to refresh your memoirs, because it's been a while, and I assume this is going to be chip shortages, manufacturing misery, and all that kind of stuff that's delayed it. This is a compact desktop 3.5mm modular synthesizer Matron with 5 channels of modulation named for the 5 moons of Pluto, 2 voices, 2 sequencers, a small keyboard with 4 capacitive pad things on it, onboard effects, and inspiration drawn from 80s Casio synths and the Buchla Music Easel. And that's kind of your thing. It's digital, low aliasing, wavetable boyos, rechargeable built-in battery, delay and reverb, quantized scalar boys on the sequencios, and you get 5 patch cables. And it looks quite nice. But I think we mentioned last time, it's a bit pricey for a digital... But it's a one-man band production, I believe. So that's why there's a bit of a premium. Anyway, that launches 12 p.m. Actually, by the time you hear this, it will have launched, and you probably can't get in on the first batch. But just so you know. The other article of newsworthingtonness is that synthesizers.com, manufacturer of 5U replicas and new designs and such, are facing hard monetary times and have made an announcement saying that they're looking to see if somebody's willing to buy the company. They're not shutting up shop just yet. Existing orders will not be affected, but it looks like they are struggling. And I remember looking into them a good while ago and not being put off by the economics of such a thing. So that it's not like they're massively expensive, but they are a great cornerstone of our modular world. So we would be sad to see them go. And I hope somebody nice and not some corporate juggernaut helps them out of this tough corner.
Please, Behringer, keep your hands away.
No, you, literally, that was the first comment on this article. It was Uli. Or Uli. Please keep away. Uli to the rescue, question mark. Sadly, 5U is a dying breed, says John on this article. What do you think, Pete? I mean, have you ever met much 5U in the wild?
No, not in person, not physically. I've often salivated over it on video, so to speak.
Definitely.
But yes, no, I would love to have some. Synthesizer.com was one of the first modular manufacturers I looked at well over a decade ago.
Indeed.
And my opinion at that time is, really expensive. And it's in America and that's all too problematic. But in hindsight, it's not that expensive if you compare it to other Eurorack manufacturers. And there's no real problem getting stuff from America.
No.
I've subsequently bought lots of equipment directly from retailers in America. So I'm wishing that I had invested back then. I'm sort of tempted to have a look and perusal now. But starting fresh, though, is a bit of a...
It's always that way, isn't it? Getting your case and power sorted before you even have any of the fun stuff.
I'm not really sure about power and power buses and that. It's all a bit of a mystery.
It's a different format, 5U. You have to learn it.
I would imagine. Is it the same voltage? Is it plus and minus 12 volts and that type of thing?
In terms of the signal voltages, I imagine it's very similar.
Well, it's all 1 volt per octave in that respect.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm thinking about...
Modulation.
And cases and that type of thing.
Oh, case power, yeah. Good question. I'm sure it'll be on their website, but we've got to keep an eye out. See... They've been around since 1996, so they're as old as I am, from Texas, in fact. And you can even get lots more modern stuff, like you can get noise engineering stuff in 5U as well, which would be compatible. So it's...
And there are other manufacturers other than Moog, obviously. There
MOTM,
are.
Moon Modular, others.
Club of Knobs.
Is there any reason why you guys think they're... Why are they shutting down? Or why
it'll be just the same pressures that everyone's facing. Chip shortages, supply chain suffrage... taking a million years to get the parts they need, that kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And
okay.
5U is very a lot niche. More obscure than Eurorack.
Yeah, it's more niche than the niche corner that we're in. I've only met it once, I think, at Brighton Modular Meet a bunch of years ago now. And once at Moog, that was it.
Yeah, I think there'd be nothing greater than having a great big 5U system with all those big quarter-inch jacks.
Exactly. I was going to say quarter-inch. It's so satisfying. Like plugging in guitar cables everywhere
that
all the time.
That does sound good, yeah.
Effectively, it's just the same stuff as the sort of traditional analog stuff, just a much bigger format, or what I would say, the original East Coast format.
Sure.
Indeed. So we'll keep an eye on that, and I shall report back if we hear some more news now. Here's a fun one. I'm going to read about... I'm going to read some of the suggestions from this excellent thread on the Mod Wiggler forum, but this will be applicable to the guitar world and even the computer world as well. The title of this thread, Favorite Label or Function Name on a Module. And I already know what mine is, but the first post is actually amazing. This is from the company Nonlinear Circuits. They have a module called Let's Splosh, which is 8 different rectifiers processing 4 input signals. So they have Custard, Treacle, Natto, and Batter as 4 separate inputs, I believe, on this module. So those are quite good names. other suggestions, there is a doom button on Noise Engineering's Ruiner Versio. There is, what do we got here? There's an output, the Woggle output, of course, on the Woggle bug. Nonlinear circuits also have Sloth Chaos, or their module called Sloth Chaos, that has a torpor control, which is quite cool. And on the there's a button and jack on Noise Engineering, again, on their Desmodus Versio, which is FSU. I'm sure you know what that stands for. And also on a Chaos devices, on the Kaminiac, or Kaminiac, I don't know, which is a phaser. They have two resonance modes called Wasted and Stoned.
Nice.
Which is fun. But my favorite will be Noise Engineering again, the Smash and Bash control on Manus Iteritas.
Anything to sell. Mm. Anything to sell, man. I love those names.
You chaps.
Super cool.
Favorite controls or labels on musical equipment? Any ideas?
I have at least one that pops out straight away in my mind, which is the Swollen Pickle.
Oh, yeah, it's way huge.
By way huge.
Swollen Pickle. That's a fuzz, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that a fuzz? Yeah.
It's a fuzz overdrivey thing.
Mm.
Recently, there's been a massive resurgence of the Fart Pedal.
The Fart Pedal.
Yeah.
Amazing. What does it do? Does it just make flubby, distorted noises?
Sounds like a fart.
Amazing.
Exactly. Tries to replicate the exact sound of a fart. It's not a fuzz. It's not anything. It's a fart.
Amazing.
Mono Neon has been using that live, by the way.
And it's,
on his breakdowns. He loves it. I'll try to think of something else. Yeah. Pete.
One, I don't know how unique it is. It's on the Endorphin's Queen of Pentacles, and it's when you're doing the controls for the snare, and it's called the Spoiler.
The Spoiler. That's quite cool. What does it do?
It sort of crushes it.
Mm. So in a compression way or a distortion way?
Yeah, so you know how you've got a way of, in most drum machines, you can open up the snare so that you're getting much more of the actual snare wire sound, the sort of, I don't know how you describe that noise.
It'd just be kind of mostly the level or decay of the noise part of the snare sound.
So then you use the Spoiler and that crushes that down so you can sort of balance between opening up and crushing it down again.
Awesome.
Get it a bit more crunchy.
Crunchy. Now there's some crazy stuff out there. There's some really cool brands that try to, there was the Miku pedal, but that was...
Oh yeah, I don't think it had any funny labels on
it. No.
That was Korg,
you
wasn't
had,
it?
Yeah, that was Korg. You had modes where you could like choose the different vowels.
Oh yeah, yeah. There is, it's not a input, output or control label, but there is the Rungler, which is, I believe, actually refers to just the name of the circuit, but that's a Eurorack module, a Rungler. And we'll have to give another shout out to Modcaffer and listener Rufus, who I believe was searching for, well, he was trying to think of a name for a module or a piece of kit that would have zero Google search results in some discussion in the Modcaf Discord, and he came up with the Flungle Bastion, which, of course, we need to make a Modcaf signature module and call it the Flungle Bastion and make sure we give him one of those.
What would it be, though?
No idea. It's got to be some kind of effect, I think, with an inappropriate amount of modulation. I think that's what it needs to be, like maybe a delay with lots of weird modulation so it just makes mad noises.
Crazy flanger sort of territory.
Yeah. You know, flanger's a good option, I reckon. Yeah. Mm. There we are. The end of what I have prepared. That means, of course, we must transition into our final portion. That is both the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, also known as what YouTube channel has Pete found this time. So we'll let you kick it off, if you may, Pete, while Telmo and I scrabble around for something that we consumed recently that is of note. Quick!
Fire away! Right, this week, a particular channel that's come to my attention is called Charles Cornell. And obviously the self-titled channel for this gentleman is in respect to music, and he does it mainly through piano playing. But it's a bit more of a broader channel in the respect that he will discuss certain techniques sometimes. Other times he'll dismantle and discuss music by film composers like Hans Zimmer, John Williams, etc., etc. And he'll break down the core essential elements of those tracks to describe what makes them powerful or what gives them the emotion or the effect that they create. And it's quite good analysis, I thought.
Is it like from a musical analysis standpoint?
Yeah, he'll actually play it out and he'll say, well, this is obviously using this particular scale and this is how they're using it. And he'll play it out and simplify it on the piano so that you can really understand the sort of nuts and bolts of the thing. But it'll be anything from the chord that makes the Batman epic.
Oh, yeah.
How Brazilian music hid protest inside harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And other ones like How to Train Your Dragon is a masterclass in theme writing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of analysis of cinematic music, but it goes into all sorts of other areas. So I would recommend this particular YouTube channel very highly. It's a reasonably successful channel. He's got 1.2 million subscribers.
Not bad.
It's not a sort of a really hidden one. And you were saying, tell me you're quite familiar with this particular gentleman.
I love him. I found out his channel through a video that he was doing a harmonica analysis on Mario Kart music.
Oh yeah, cool.
And that was great. Yeah, I really like the way that he puts stuff forward very simply, but just by playing the chord, so you can hear the changes and you can sort of...
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I thought. I thought, no, this is really great. I'm very inspired generally by cinematic music. It's one of the genres that I find most interesting these days. And this particular gentleman really does some really good autopsies on certain pieces. Certainly very much worth a watch. So that is my multimedia recommendation for this week. The YouTube channel simply entitled Charles Cornell.
Wonderful. I have an album for you this week. That is by Carpenter Brut, or Brew, Carpenter, B-R-U-T. Carpenter Brut. The album is Trilogy, and we're talking synthy, angry, electronic-y stuff. It's pretty cool. Whole album is definitely worth a listen to, but if you don't have the time, the highlights for me would be L.A. Venice Bitch 80s, what a song title, Roller Mobster, and Hang 'Em All, Carpenter Brut Trilogy.
Sick.
There's some good music videos for it as well. Telmo, take us away to the finish line. What have you been consuming?
Actually, quite a lot of stuff. I have a list of YouTube stuff that I could talk about, mostly stupid, funny stuff. I've also been discovering podcasts recently, so I could show you a bunch of podcasts. But there is this one thing that probably strike me on a creative path more than anything else recently, and it's a movie called Jerry with a G. It's from the early 2000s, and it's one of the first movies that put Matt Damon into the starlet.
Gotcha.
This was before he became like a massive Hollywood star.
Yeah.
And it's just a couple of dudes. They go out on a hike, and you know, they're just two friends, and they get lost in the desert, and the whole movie is about them trying to survive. The way that the story is told, for me, it was very inspiring, because I've never really came across a genre which is, I think it's called slow cinema, or is it like is it slow cinema?
Slow-nima.
Slow-nima.
No, it's not.
Yeah. It's basically a very like obscure type of film that it's supposed to be excruciatingly slow. I guess Tarantino took stuff from him, maybe even, you know, it could have started back in the day with Stanley Kubrick, who knows. Yeah, so the scenes are very long. There's just to give you an example, there's a particular scene which is like 10 minutes and it's just them walking on the same shot. So that's just kind of explains how it is. That took me on a spiral, and it kind of put me, I was basically coming up with a performance which I was going to play at the ModCaf, which is called The Barren Land, and it was something that I created for as a final project for my uni, last final project, and involved like a lot of triggering with my Ableton Push, and I had like different wavetable synthesis and feedback loops in different scenes coming in and out, and I did several improvising sessions with that particular scene, that 10-minute scene where they're walking. That was something that's, you know, because you can almost tell a story and you can almost imagine what could have gone in their heads and what could have been happening. And you can sort of improvise with that. And that was my whole thing. And it's just, it's been a brilliant... It all started with watching a movie, and it sort of, I went on a path of discovering that I could perform a kind of, you know, alternative piece with my Ableton Push. So that was great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Once more, maybe we'll catch you in the future. Until then, listeners, stay tuned to Rack Addicts After Hours, and we'll catch you in the next one. Farewell.